Anyam Home is a space where we can all engage about self-love, self-worth, relationships, trauma, and healing. I hope that you enjoy your stay, and I am your host, Tando. Hey everyone, welcome to yet another episode of Honey I'm Home. Thank you for choosing to press play and thank you for coming back. If you are new here, this is Honey I'm Home, where we speak everything mental well-being, trauma, the relationships that we have with ourselves and other people. I hope that you will enjoy your stay. But before we move forward, we are still in September, meaning that we're speaking about change. We're speaking about how we can adapt to change and how we can welcome change. The previous month, we were speaking everything relating to returning back to ourselves and also how we can stay there once we have returned to ourselves. There's also an episode on how to prevent suicide and the signs that you should look out for when you are experiencing mental battles. And I would recommend people to listen to that episode. I also have attached like a link for the psychologist if you need therapy. But on today's episode, we are speaking about how to navigate fear and how to adapt to this new normal that we find ourselves in, especially if you are a creative. I am joined by Amu, and she's going to introduce herself. Hey Amu, how are you?
I am very well, thanks. And yourself?
I am really good. It's a beautiful day and I couldn't wait to have you on my podcast. From the time that we spoke, I thought we really need to continue the conversation we were having, and we're speaking about how hard it has been for creatives to kind of get back into the swing of things with how things are changing, but also the normal person, you know, someone who is a non-creative. Yeah. Let me actually not say a normal person, someone who's just not a creative, how they can also adapt and how they can navigate fear of trying new things, going into different spaces. So I want us to have that conversation now, just speak about your own personal experience. But before I go further, can you do an introduction of who you are?
My goodness. For the record, I hate these parts because I never really know what to say. So my name is Amo. I go by Amo, you know, stage name Amo Helang. And I'm primarily theater trained. I come from an acting background. I then went into podcasting and writing, and I'm currently working in digital production. So at every point in my life, I'm trying to express my creativity. And I'm myself very passionate about having conversations with creatives, you know, having conversations about the culture and just keeping, you know, keeping my head up amidst all the stuff that's happening, because there's a bunch of stuff that's happening. And I don't want to necessarily center myself as the only one who has these issues, but it's really just about hearing what the general sentiment is and how people are navigating this new normal. So I think platforms like these, Honey, I'm Home, are so important, you know?
Yes.
Are so important because I think now more than ever, we all just want to connect on some level, you know?
Yeah.
So that's essentially who I am, yeah.
Yeah, and just following from that, with regards to just us connecting to other people, how do you think we've changed the means of our communication to suit where we are right now? And how difficult has it been, especially with you working in the industry that you work in, how difficult has it been shifting from, you know, having in contact communication with people to having like virtual, to then going back to contact, to going back to virtual? How's that been for you?
I must say, obviously, you know, so I hadn't been working. I hadn't been working in an office space for a long time. In fact, I was freelancing.
Yeah.
And so it didn't really feel like much had changed for me, because I always had the option of working from home or meeting up with someone at a cafe or having a meeting over coffee. But I think once I got into the corporate space, because I do work in a sort of corporate setup right now, the inconsistency of being in the office the one time, then having to stay home, then being in the office, the inconsistency of doing that has really affected, you know, the quality of connection and maybe even the quality of work to some extent, because the adjustment hasn't been that easy. And so I know initially when, you know, when the news came that we'd have to work from home or whatever, I was like, yes, I can work from home. But there was a general disconnectedness that I felt, like when we'd have to have meetings over Zoom or whatever the case may be. It really occurred to me then, which was a learning moment, that there are certain ways that I pick up information easier than other ways. For example, yeah. Zoom meetings work to a certain extent, but it's not the best way for me to learn. And it's not the best way for me to necessarily communicate. And I know it sounds crazy because it's the only difference is that we're not in the same space, but everything is happening in real time. But I just learned about myself in that moment that perhaps I'm just not, I don't grasp information as quickly as I would have if the person was in front of me. Do you know what I mean? Yes. All of that, considering, you know, Wi-Fi connections, you know, just general day to day, you know, your colleague's baby is crying in the background. So it's just, it's, you get a lot more distracted when you're working from home. And I had to be very honest with myself about that, because then at some point I had to make the decision to just actually brave it out and go to the office. You know, and obviously I'm following all my COVID protocols, but for me, it was just about recognizing that I'm not as productive as I'd like to be if I'm working in a space that I live in, you know? So I had to remove myself from my living space to set up that boundary, I guess, between where I'm comfortable, where I'm making, where I'm resting, where I'm making food. And I needed a clear distinction between that environment and the environment where I need to engage my brain, my gula oblongata. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think it's been quite the adjustment for everyone, I think. And maybe it's not even necessarily limited to work, but I think in some aspect of your life, you have had to make some kind of adjustment. Many things have broken, many things have fallen together, but it's just the topsy-turvy has been out of this world. But I guess it's just about like doubling down on yourself and realizing what moments could you have learned from, and how can you move forward from there?
Yeah, but a lot of people don't have that privilege, and a lot of people don't have that ability to try and fail and then try again. They have to attempt, and it has to work that first attempt. But I'm just curious to find out what you have noticed in terms of the quality of work that people produce before and after the pandemic, in terms of, are we experiencing a lot of digital fatigue at the moment? And also, you know, this week that we had, a lot of people were just very tired. A lot of people are feeling like it's the stretch to the end of the year, and there's fear surrounding, are we even going to make it to the end of the year? And are we going to be able to be functional beings that are able to make it to the end of the year? So have you seen a difference in the quality of work that you've been producing at the moment in relation to the work that you used to produce earlier?
I think in my case, I have to be incredibly cognizant of the different environments that I was working in. So I was freelancing before, and, you know, I still felt like I had some kind of freedom and I could do what I wanted to do, and I was in charge of what inspired me perhaps and what didn't. But once I moved to a completely different working environment where there were some regulations, I mean, that's how it goes in corporate. You know, you can't just do what you want. You know, there are rules and regulations, and you're accountable to someone. You know what I mean? I do think for me, it's streamlined me. And I say this in the sense that, like, it's put some things into focus. Do you know what I mean? I'm not a visual artist who now has the canvas and I could splat to paint and use different techniques. I am now given a canvas and I'm given certain colors and I'm sort of guided on what the picture should look like, right? And that's just me personally. So that's how my quality of work has sort of changed in that regard. But I think on a larger scale, creatives and and artists for that matter, we're not feeling very inspired. And I know I can't necessarily speak for everyone, but I know from the few conversations I've had is that we're not feeling very inspired, and artists or the industry is almost feeling bankrupt, not just financially. So the bankruptcy is now affecting your mental capacity, your ability to create, because now jobs are more scarce than ever. Now we are all privy to the unemployment rates, but now, you know, when it comes to the entertainment industry and the creative sector, you know, things are always a little bit more, I don't know, things are always a little bit more scarce in that industry.
Yeah. Things,
do you know what I mean? Yeah. So
yes,
I just feel a general sense of like, not necessarily hopelessness, but like a sense that because we're not connecting in the way that we are used to. I mean, we thrive on human connection, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like a bunch of our inspiration, most of our inspiration, it comes from chemistry, comes from connecting, comes from just talking to someone, or, you know, looking into someone's eyes, or seeing how the wind affects how their blouse moves. Do you know what I mean? So little moments that would inspire how we create have now been compromised because you are now confronted with yourself every single day. Not everybody has had the privilege to even navigate confronting the self every single day, because life in and of itself, how it's set up, is one big distraction. So I think that, yeah, I think there are various, I think it could work for some people. It doesn't work for others, but I know, you know, from an artist standpoint, or from the creatives, there's almost a sense of like, I don't know, there's almost a sense of like gray area now. And there's a yearning to experience the world in full color, because in that way you're able to produce, you're affected, and then you're able to produce. I think you asked a really important question about whether we're experiencing fatigue, and what I'm going to do from that question is turn it into a math, a 1+1 equals kind of math, where we are experiencing a digital fatigue. So who knew that we'd ever actually get tired of being on the internet? You know, who knew that like being online could zap you of your energy, because it's all we ever do. Now this transition from creating work in real time, I guess, to creating work for the digital space has now shifted, which could be seen as an opportunity for some people and a disadvantage for others. Like I said, the adjustment practice doesn't necessarily work the same for everyone. But now this idea that we constantly have to make work for an online community that you, whose names you know, because these days, you know, your handle is your currency. But like, you know, this idea that you have to shift from basic connection to surviving on likes, you know, it just seems like the general social currency has changed so much. And, you know, just to bring it back to artistry and creativity, there are various opportunities, as we see on like our platforms on TikTok, where we're seeing a vast creative outburst, and it's beautiful. You know, there are people that we've never met before, but they have been able to create these moments, to create these stories, to create these TikToks that make us laugh. And in that way, they've been able to make the most of creating work for the online community. But there's a bunch of artists who, let's take the theater practitioners, for example. Theater is what theater is. It's meant to be a real time experience. It's meant to be here now in the moment. And now theater has to consider being online?
Yeah.
That's absolutely crazy. It's almost scary. And you know, I often think about this, and I've never come to any kind of resolution about how theater could possibly live online. Do you know what I mean? There are certain techniques, yes, that we can employ, but then the essence of what theater is completely taken away, you know? So, gosh, there are so many elements to the adjustment period, and there are so many ways that I guess we can learn to live with it and to upgrade.
Yeah.
You know, it's about time, perhaps, that there's a shift in how we do things. But as much as change is necessary, it can be a little frustrating sometimes, even to your own detriment.
It can be. And we are so accustomed to routine and like this rigid lifestyle, because like we do this, especially because the system that we're in wants you to be rigid. Okay, you'll go to school, you'll go to varsity, you'll work, you die, right? So there's very free room. I mean, there's very much little room for us to have free movement, and you need to have the agency to find that liberty to be, you know, flexible in your own life. And you have to be very self-aware when you're navigating fear and you're navigating new spaces. But I just, you know, I was thinking a lot about what role it would play, in essence, you being self-aware and you not disqualifying yourself from things that you could potentially do, because we literally will talk ourselves from doing something really great because we think we're not good enough. We think this is not for us. And now, obviously, more than ever, people are very protective over themselves because we've lost so much. So what role do you think being self-aware could play in us, you know, potentially being more welcoming for like different environments and more welcoming to change?
The self-awareness conversation can't happen without us recognizing the privilege that comes with being self-aware.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a luxury to be self-aware. Yeah. Yes, you know, we can be online and hashtag self-love, self-care Sundays, you know, self-awareness, take care of your mind. But it's a luxury that not a lot of people are afforded. So in that sense, then, you know, I can't expect how I take care of myself and how I navigate a situation to look the same for the next person.
Right.
And I think it'll always come back to self-awareness then, because then if you know what works for you, you'll hone in on that. You'll focus on something that works for you. But if you don't know what works for you, you're just, like you said, not everyone has the room to fail. You know what I mean? So if you don't know that you have options, or if you don't know that if you're not given the opportunity to play and explore, you'll never know what other ways you could possibly figure things out. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm not even sure I'm going to answer your question, but I think what the pandemic has done, if anything, has really forced a self-confrontation. You know, and maybe not even yourself personally, because I think there are various ways that we have learned to distract ourselves from ourselves. But, you know, there are various aspects of ourselves. You know, we see certain parts of ourselves in our family, certain parts of ourselves in our friends, certain parts of ourselves in our home, the space that we've created. So this is the way then that the pandemic has sort of forced a self-confrontation, because now we are limited to one space over a long period of time. And I can't speak for everyone again, but not everyone may have had the capacity to even ask themselves questions. Some people don't even want to. Some people are just like, well, it is what it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's really just a matter of choice to a certain extent. Like, what are you choosing to do with what you have? And if you're choosing to do nothing, then you're choosing to do nothing. But I know that even in instances where collectively, like the world, even in instances where we have tried to ignore the harsh reality about a bunch of things, you know what I mean? About how the world works.
Yeah.
There have been certain occurrences or things that have happened, things that we've seen on the news that will disrupt our sort of ignorance and force us to see the thing for what it is and make a choice to confront it or keep it moving. So I think it even comes back to a general philosophy about life. You know, what you resist persists. You know, the longer you try to ignore something is the more it'll keep coming up, because you just kind of need to confront the thing that you need to confront. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, you know, I have sensitive skin, right? And a pimple, for example, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
A really bad pimple can really be the difference between you moving on with your life joyfully and you actually just having a really bad month.
Yeah.
Because the thing is there, the pimple is there, confront it in whatever way you possibly can. And sometimes ignoring it works, but other times it just doesn't. You know?
It just doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think also just drawing back to what you were saying earlier before this conversation is that, like, some people are despondent, right? We can't look past that. We can't say, oh my goodness, you just aren't choosing to have a better life. You don't want the best for yourself, because they are always in survival mode. So it's always good to distinguish between people who have the ability to do so and people who just because of their backgrounds cannot do that to begin with, right? And so even the element of fear for them, it's more a thing of, that's what I know and I cannot do anything because this is my situation, this is what I'm going to do with it, you know.
That is so interesting that you should say that, because like you said, I think you're absolutely right in saying that, like, not everyone has that capacity. And we can take it back to upbringing. We can take it back to, you know, the environment that one is in, et cetera, et cetera. But I think even if you, I just wanted to make an example about surviving. Some people are literally, some of us, I'm not even going to make it a us and them thing. Because I think at some point or another, I've also just locked myself into survival mode. Because fear will cripple you so much to a point where you don't feel like you have any other option but to do the thing that you only know how to do, you know? And I think, yeah, that's the thing about fear. But, you know, I suppose for me then, I wonder how, and I guess this is a question to you, how do you identify fear when fear is in the room? How do you know for yourself as Uthando that, oh my God, okay, I'm feeling the feeling of fear. And in the moment, do you make a choice? Do you, like, how? Yes. Because it's also a very sort of up in the air feeling. We know, yes, you know, your heart will beat a little bit faster. Yes. You know what I mean? But, like, how do you know? How do you know? Yeah.
I think for me, again, drawing back to self-awareness, is you will know your body if you are very self-aware. You know, you'll know feelings of being happy. You'll know feelings of being sad. You'll know feelings of being out of place. You'll know feelings of danger. That's why when you walk down an alley and you start shivering and you get goosebumps and your heart just stops racing, you know that this is not a safe environment for me. And you are very, like, anxious and very scared. So if you know your body can recognize that emotion, that feeling. So feelings of fear come a lot with, you know, you feel very shaken, you feel unsettled, you feel like the ground that you're on, you're not stepping on that ground. It's literally shaking. And I think the thing about fear is that it grips you in such a way that, like exponentially, right? So it will be a gradual increase from, maybe I shouldn't do this. And then it's, oh my goodness, I shouldn't do this. And it's like, oh my goodness, I shouldn't do this, you know? It grips you from just the thoughts that you have, the things that you say to yourself, the words that you use when you're speaking to yourself, and the processes that are happening in your mind, you know? So being very aware of your normal baseline and when you deviate from it really helps you in pinpointing exactly that moment of fear, and also knowing where it stems from. So if you have never tried something before and you feel a certain way, then you know it's anxiety surrounding that, it's fear surrounding that. But if it's things that you've done before, maybe it's, you know, you're just not comfortable with it yet, and you still feel a little bit uneasy about it. But I genuinely feel that when you know your body to a certain extent, you can recognize that feeling of Right now, I'm either doubting myself, I'm being fearful. Like when you go into an interview, you know that you will feel intimidated by the people around you. You'll feel small. You'll feel the pressure. You'll feel anxiety, and you'll feel the fear. And the fear is, you know, you can sense it by the things that you say. If you're anxious, it's okay. Let me just breathe in and out. Because when you're anxious, there's very little time for you to process a lot of the things that are happening. So it's more, I don't want to panic, okay? And then with fear is you're letting those thoughts marinate in your mind, and they become bigger than what the thing actually is. So you can see this apple is really small, and you don't, you know, you don't want to bite into it because what if there's a worm inside? and then now it's like, oh my goodness, no way, is this entire bag of apples probably has worms inside, but you haven't even like tried this one small thing. And I think fear also is attached to the element of rejection. So we are so scared of getting rejected that we never try anything. So I think understanding that really does help you, because if there's no element of like rejection or disappointment, or your life basically just changing, or your heart getting shattered, then maybe it's a different feeling or a different emotion. But I genuinely always encourage people to just know your body. Your body will tell you everything you need to know. The more you speak to yourself in a positive manner, the more you affirm, the more you take the time to know yourself, the better things become. But drawing from this again, why don't we ever see fear as a motivator, but as a sign that we shouldn't do anything? Because I've started doing this thing. If I'm fearful, then it means there's something on the line. If there are no nerves, it means I don't care about it. I don't care for it.
I want to contest that. Because I recently came across this TikTok. Once again, thank you, God, for TikTok. It's just a well of knowledge and information. But yeah. I think it's almost like I can't remember. I think it may have been a psychology page or whatever. And now what they're proposing is that when you're meeting someone or when you're talking to someone and you have butterflies in your stomach, that's not necessarily a good feeling. And think about how your whole life you were looking for butterflies in your stomach. Yeah. When you were talking to the guy that you liked or the girl that you liked, you know what I mean? Like, so these ideas that when you feel nervous and when you feel, when you're a mess about something, it really, really matters to you. But it also could be one of the ways that your body is communicating that, no, don't do that. Do you know what I mean? No, this is not healthy for you.
That's
you know?
Actually very interesting. I don't know if you believe in like soulmates or energy and things related, but I've read somewhere that when you meet someone who's actually very good for you, they come with peace, right? So you won't feel like the butterflies, you won't feel the knees shaking, there will be a lot of peace in your life. So I guess it's also the same
principle
when it comes. So I actually really like having these kind of conversations, because we have opposing views, but then there's a common ground there in that you will feel a certain way. And so it's always a learning point that, okay, now going forward, when I am in a moment of fear, I can evaluate and look, okay, I'm feeling all these things in my body. Is this what I'm meant to be doing? Is my body trying to guide me to say no? Don't do that. It's not for you. But also, where do we draw the line? Because the body can sometimes, you know, go into flight or fight. And where do you draw the line between, no, I actually want to do this, I want to try this, I want to attempt this, and saying, my body is telling me, no, don't do
and
that.
And also, I mean, we need to remember that, you know, trauma lives in the body. This is why, you know, your meditations and your exercising and just moving your body is really important, because it's one of the ways that you can shed things that you may still unconsciously be holding onto. But what I wanted to say, just coming off what you were saying about how, you know, your body might be reacting a certain way to tell you whether you should proceed or not. Because our body, because our body holds so much trauma, some responses could literally just be a survival response. Some responses could just be repetition. Some responses are not necessarily now and good for you. So I suppose the point I was trying to make here is that, you know, when it comes to the conversation about self-awareness, it's almost cyclical because it will come down to self-awareness and how aware yeah. are you that how you're responding to this situation is not based on something that happened 10 years ago. So are you being truthful in your response? And have you done enough work to have let go of what happened then that you're aware enough now to know that this is your truthful response to this moment? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So even I like what you said about how, you know, if when you feel nervous about something, it matters. These are things that we're taught. But is it true? Again, it right. comes down to self-awareness.
If, right.
if we've put weight on feeling nervous to know that something is good, then maybe we can go back to the drawing board. Yeah. But if it works for you, then it works for you. I think the larger conversation, perhaps, or even something that we could talk about amongst ourselves is, you know, if something is good for you and if you want the best out of something, it should bring you peace. It's like what you said about, you know, your partner. If you're talking to someone and they bring you peace and whatever, then at least you know to some extent that this is a cool person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think we've put weight, man, on drama and, you know, passion. Mm. What yep. does that even mean? Does that have to be messy? Does that have to be, oh my God, my heart is pounding. That means I really have to be with this person. It's just, I guess we'll never stop asking the questions, but I think it's really important that we get to a point where we are being honest about who we are from moment yeah. to moment. You know what I mean?
True.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a book actually titled The Body Remembers or something like that. I'll link it in the description below. But it speaks exactly about trauma and the fact that if you were experiencing a certain emotion in a situation that really was detrimental to your well-being, in similar situations going forward, you will experience the same feeling in the same place, right? So let's say, for example, you were having an argument with a parent and there was a lot of shouting and there was like physical interactions involved where the parent, you know, like laid their hands on you. And that specific place, when you do become, you know, aware of like your environment and you get triggered, most likely you are going to feel pain at that very same point, which is very interesting.
I'm so glad you used that as an example because I, oh my God, this is absolutely crazy. So I have had to confront my childhood traumas through work.
Yeah.
And it's literally the example that I'm about to use is so similar to what you just said. I don't respond well. And I guess it's something that I guess it's something that happened in my childhood. I don't respond well to people raising their voices at me. I almost clam up and I go into a little, you know, corner and I don't respond well. I feel like my back is up against the wall. And I think, like I said, it might be a childhood trauma, whatever the case may be. Right.
Yes.
And so, like I said, I've now gotten into a new work environment. You know, I've gone from freelancing into a more corporate sort of setup. And I won't lie, I have been failing dismally.
Yeah.
You know, I've been making so many mistakes. And so it got to a point where, you know, my boss and my manager have called me into and they've summoned me into a meeting and my boss is livid with me and he's raising his voice and he's shouting. And I literally felt the grip over my body. Literally felt like the however many years old I was when this thing happened. And it almost felt like an unconscious decision that I made when I was young that every time somebody raises their voices at me, I'm going to tap out. I'm going to close off and there's nothing I can do about the situation. So here I am being shouted at by my boss and I go into fear gripped panic mode. You know, it was really starting to affect my work because I'm now constantly moving in fear and I'm reliving this thing, this contract that I've unconsciously made with myself, that when someone raises their voice at me, that means I've done something wrong. That means I can't make mistakes. And that means that now I'm living my life constantly wanting to be perfect. And over the last few weeks, I even said to my manager that, you know, I'm just trying to keep a low profile and do the right thing. And my manager was like, no, but we want to hear you. We love your voice. That's part of the reason why we brought you in. We want to hear you. So you're doing yourself a disservice by cutting yourself off. And in that moment, I realized that I beat myself up for making mistakes. And because I take someone perhaps wanting to correct me, and I know there's a fundamental difference between talking to someone and talking at someone. And I think shouting at people sometimes is really not the best way to get the message across. But I think in my case, you know, I just came to the realization for myself that because when I was young, I understood being shouted at as being wronged, and therefore making mistakes was not allowed, because every time you made a mistake, you'd get shouted at. And now I've lived most of my life wanting to be perfect because I want to avoid being shouted at, because I don't want to clam up. And I came to that realization for myself, and it blew my mind, because I'm a 28-year-old woman who cannot function when I am called into it. Like, I would, every time my boss would call me, every time my manager would send me a message, I would freeze out, because I was fearful that I may have done something wrong. And so I've attached doing something wrong to not be good. And these are things that are still living in my body. And it, you know, when I came to that realization, it honestly, wow. Even just talking about it right now is absolutely crazy, because I didn't realize that's what was happening. So imagine the many other ways we are consciously reacting to situations based on our childhood traumas, because we haven't confronted the actual thing, you know? And the danger in that is that you're not listening to what is being said. You are just reacting because of the thing that may have happened years ago. True. You know what I mean?
True.
So imagine the many times we have missed out on an opportunity to grow and learn, because again, we're not fully present and learning in the moment. We are so fear gripped that that's the only thing that matters.
And I'm so glad that, you know, we are having this conversation, because we just don't understand like childhood traumas the way that we should, like our wounded child the way that we should. And also our environments don't really allow us to sit and introspect. Everything is go, go, go. And so you shove everything to the background, and it makes sense, you know, to just keep going, because a lot of people were told time will heal everything. No, time is not going to heal it if you aren't putting in the work. You need to confront that wound. You need to confront that child in you that was wounded, because then once you start becoming very aware of your patterns, do you realize, this is something I've been experiencing from a very young age, and I need to change it. So that also, again, I think the summary of this entire episode then goes back to being self-awareness, being very aware of yourself, your emotions, your feelings, the things that you've gone through, the things that you need to, you know, heal, so that you can navigate fear, you can navigate work, you can navigate changes, and you can welcome change and adapt to change. And I'm really, really glad we had this conversation, because it's going to highlight so many things that we need to work on as individuals. But I think the greater part of it is working on the things that are preventing you from being the person that you ultimately need to be, because you can't keep yourself boxed because of the things that happened in the past, because then you're not giving way to the new person that you could be, and you're doing a disservice and dishonoring the person that you could potentially be. But I think we're going to leave it there. Very insightful episode. I think it would be really nice to have a part two.
I was literally about to invite myself because the conversation is not over. If anything, it's not. Is just beginning. So
it's not over.
I was literally about to invite myself. Thank you. Thank you so much for this wonderful platform. And I think I mean, I'm not going to beat around the bush. I think it's absolutely important that Black women are having these conversations. And I'm even more excited to see how this can filter out into Black communities, because we don't talk about these things, guys. We really don't. And I think it's absolutely important that we start to talk about how, you know, sometimes generational curses are not just financial. They also could just be psychological and spiritual. Right. And so I think the more we have the conversations, the more we're opening ourselves up to the possibility of healing as a community and as a Black community. So thank you so much.
I really appreciate your time. I appreciate your knowledge. And I also really appreciate, I tweeted something earlier that I like people who are open-minded, because we're able to have a conversation with differing views and learn from each other. And that's what this is all about, just growth and learning from the next person, because now I have a different perspective that I can apply and choose to apply, you know. So it's always really nice to have conversations where it doesn't end in like, no, I'm right, you're wrong, and that's it, you know. So thank you so much, guys. If you made it this far, I really appreciate you. Please do give a follow to Amu. I'm going to leave all her links to her social media profiles in the description box. And also, I will see you guys in a different episode. But before I close off, please do give me a 5-star rating and a review. I would really love to hear from you guys. I appreciate the engagement. I appreciate you guys always sharing the platform with other people. And also, if you have found value in the platform, I really appreciate you coming back and also giving me the feedback. Thank you so much once again. See you guys in a different episode. Goodbye.